The Pixel 4a doesn't need 5G, you probably don't care about Motorola phones that aren't the Razr, and get ready for the ultimate Chinese App Store app collection. Semicolon. This is the Android Police Podcast. It is Friday, February 7th. Welcome, I'm Jules Wong. And joining us today is a longtime friend of mine and colleague from Pocket Now. He's been producing tech podcasts and freelance writing in general for the past few years with bylines in LifeWire, Bored at Work, and more. He joins us from Chicago today, Adam Dowd. Glad to have you on the show.
I'm glad to be here, sir. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, well, with the developing news we have at Android Police internally, I should say, I was very insistent that I get you on, and we would be just chatting and just reminiscing some good times. So, as a friend and as a colleague, again, I'm very happy that you have carved out some time today.
Yeah, this is gonna be fun. It's like a Pocket Now reunion. I love it.
I know, right? Yeah, if only Fisher was. Fisher was here for an episode of the new format, and we also poured the Marquez Brownlee too. So, it's been a fun ride here.
That's heady company. So it is. I'm honored. I'm doubly honored now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we shall talk more about what we have to say in due time. Let's give it until the end of the show, we'll talk about that. In the meantime, we have news, and I think it's about time to get to it. So let's talk about that Pixel 4a, the latest intel from XDA developers regarding the code names, and you know about Google and its Nexus and Pixel code names. They like to talk about fish, and in this case we have three reference boards at least. What is codenamed is the reference boards which the chipsets get worked on, but they may or may not necessarily become phones of their own right once they announce them, so that's something to be mindful of. And in this case, we've got Sunfish, which XDA has confirmed to be the Pixel 4a based on their sourcing. It's going to be a Snapdragon 730 phone, and that's one of the recent chips that was announced, I believe this month, or just last month, actually. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a 4G-only phone, and for a phone that's supposed to be pretty, it's supposed to be mid-range, give you all the goods, and not cost too much. I think that is a reasonable choice. That's fine and all. I think a lot of questions are going to be raised about what we've talked about in the rumors, and I think they can mostly be raised and then answered once they've announced the phone and once people have gotten a chance to use it. So, if you'll pardon me, I think we'll skip most of that discussion. What okay. I do want to talk about here is Redfin and Bramble, the two other phones that are boards that we can talk about. Yeah. And those are supposed to have the Snapdragon 765, which is the mid-range of the 5G chipsets that Qualcomm announced for this year. And we've seen phones in China with this chipset. They tend to cost around $600 over there now. Given any inflation or any sorts of, well, there's a whole bunch of inflation that Google can do, and we know Google has been pushing margins up. What do you think about the future for these perhaps becoming Pixel 5, Pixel 5 XL? Because they're walking on a real tightrope here. They've really been pushing that 3A and some of the more affordable items on their smart speaker list, like the Nest Mini. And it just seems like their audience is gravitating towards like basic budget, does the job well items. And it's, we've seen the backlash against the Pixel 3 and the Pixel 4 for just being a little too frilly and not getting the basics done right. Right. I'm wondering what you think about the road ahead here towards the latter half of the year.
So, and the article points this out fairly accurately. This is Google that we're talking about here. This is the company that owns two mapping services. So it wouldn't surprise me to see that, you know, Google was testing something out with like a 765 just to see how it performs in some type of future type of flagship device. Because as you correctly pointed out, a lot of Google's customers are gravitating towards the Pixel 3a just because you're getting essentially a Pixel 3 experience in a Pixel 3a. And so, but for half the cost, literally. So it wouldn't surprise me to see that Google was messing around with something like a Snapdragon 765 for a future device, like a Pixel 5, perhaps. Like, maybe Google is thinking, well, what if we use a mid-range chip, and that way we can keep down the cost and maybe move some more units. I don't think that's what's going on here, but it could very well be. It could also be that Google is poking around at releasing a 5G Pixel 4a device, which wouldn't be a terrible idea. I mean, 5G is not yet a thing. It's kind of a thing, and like in Sprint and T-Mobile world, it's kind of a thing. But as the article also points out, that with AT&T and Verizon, it's not really a thing. They're using millimeter wave tech, which is fine. But I believe both of them have some type of sub-6 element as well, but they're really focusing on millimeter wave, which is just no. Anyway, so
yeah, I believe that in those cases, they're kind of slowly refarming, and they're doing the best they can to implement DSS, which is the dynamic kind of using the same spectrum they have for 4G right now and turning it over to 5G. But they can only split hairs so much, and right. At some point, they're really going to need to turn off some of those towers, and that's going to be a painful process to at least wait for the full transformation, which, you know, it's going to be long and difficult, as with any of these infrastructure things. But
it would also surprise me. I just want to throw in one more point here. It would also kind of surprise me to see Google roll out a 5G mid-range phone before a 5G flagship. 5G, I think in the minds of consumers, is kind of a flagship feature, and I'm not sure that mid-range phones, I don't necessarily think people are going to connect those dots, especially, you know, and again, it would be kind of like Google cannibalizing its own product by saying, here's a Pixel 4, which we love and is great, but by the way, here's a Pixel 5G phone, you know, for even less than what we're selling the Pixel 4 for. It's so hard. Google is such a hard company to read. And so it wouldn't surprise me to see this roll out on a Pixel 4a model. It also wouldn't surprise me to see Google hold off on this and release a mid-range chip on their next flagship device. So I don't know. This is kind of a wait and see thing, but if I had to put money on it, I would say that we're going to see a 5G Pixel 4a.
Interesting that you see that. See, on my end, I think Google has just met so much resistance to its pricing and for phones that are kind of inadequate. Yeah, thank you, Google, for at least doing that for me. What did you search for anyways? So much resistance. Exactly, that's right. And yeah. I think, you know, for them, it's going to be a question of how can we position a flagship phone with components that are increasing in price, especially this year with 5G. That 865, as I've heard in from talks in Hawaii, is that going to be really more expensive than even the 855 ever really was. So
really,
it's going to be kind of, they're going to have to work with what they can. And I still think Google is really still obsessed with the extra tricks up its sleeves, to the point where they're going to find a way to botch it up perhaps. So ideally, I would like to see a 5G Pixel 4a and maybe just think of the Pixel 5 as another mid-range phone.
Sure.
A lot of the audience tends to think that that's a good, they're strong suit, I guess, because They control Android, and Android has been getting better and better as a base, and their services have also been too. So yeah, that's something to hopefully look out for. But in the meantime, we shall move on and talk about something else.
Okay.
How about some Motorola phones? And I inserted this one here mostly as a favor to you because we got the Chicago boys.
The Chicago connection. Yeah. So, funny enough, I wasn't able to attend the event where Moto unveiled these phones because I was actually covering the auto show, which is also in Chicago this week. And so, like, I had to kind of pick between the two, and the auto show only had like two media days, and yesterday was the only one that I could go to. So I had to kind of pass on Motorola. But these two devices look interesting. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Go ahead.
No. That's fine. No, that's okay. So apparently people were holed up in the merchandise mart for a little bit while they got to preview these two new phones of the Moto G range. Historically, they're mid-range devices, and also historically one of their better-selling devices as opposed to their flagships. And there's been a kind of a mix and match as of recent because Lenovo has been getting a little bit more interested in doing the Moto One, the Motorola One kind of thing. And I feel like there's a bit more hybridity. That's not a word, but I'll go with it, going on in here.
It is now.
Say it and it shall be. So we have kind of two of the same phones here, the Moto G Power and the Moto G Stylus, with mostly the same chassis, I guess you could call it. So between the two, they share the Snapdragon 665, 4 gigs of RAM, and a 6.4-inch full HD LCD panel. Most of the same cameras. They both have the 2-megapixel macro camera, which is a big thing now. Macro in general. Ultrawide camera, front-facing camera, all the same. In terms of like the real differences here, the G Power has 64 gigs of storage. G Stylus has 128 gigs. And in terms of battery, the G Power has the 5,000 milliamp hour battery, and the Stylus has the 4,000 milliamp hour battery, partly due to that Stylus that is stuck in that silo in device over there, which is unfortunately not inductive but capacitive, and I don't see too much in the way of like accommodating software or special software to support that. Yeah, that's what you get for the G Power. It's $250, and for the G Stylus it's $300. And I'm just wondering what your first blush is on all of this, because, well, it's basic. I've never really thought of it as like kind of a frilly thing, or at least they're not trying to do anything with extra aspects to spice up what's basically a cheese pizza.
Right. Well, I mean, the Moto G has long set the standard for being the, if you will, kind of like the cream of the crop of the mid-range space. Like the Moto's done a lot of things right in the mid-range space with the Moto G line, which is why it's so successful. So with these two additions, now the Moto G Power has a very obvious space in this particular arena, and that is for people that want a big battery, full stop. Now the Moto G Stylus, I'm honestly not sure who this is for, because, like, I mean, sure, there are Stylus fans out there, and to a point, I'm kind of one of them. I very much enjoy the accuracy of a Stylus over, like, you know, trying to hit a button with my sausage fingers. But at the same time, with it being a capacitive stylus and not inductive, you're really, really kind of limiting the functionality of that stylus beyond just right on the screen. And maybe it's possible that that's what most people will do with it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, like, the one part about this, you know, the really eyebrow raising part of this is the pricing, the $299 and the $249 for these two phones, which are pretty good. I mean, regardless of the price point, you know, these two phones, you know, especially for sub $300, I don't think you could go wrong with picking up either of these phones, because Motorola does a lot of great stuff with software. Motorola does a lot of great stuff with hardware and making the software work for the hardware. And yeah, it's just the Moto. If I had to pick one, I would probably go with the G Power. Now, they're not called the G8 Power or the G8 stylus. They're just the G Power, which I'm kind of curious as to see how that's going to develop with future generations. Are they going to go with like the Kindle where it's just the Kindle now and it's just the new Kindle or whatever? But yeah, I mean, these phones look very compelling at their price points. So yeah, I'm happy about this news. And I'll be honest, I seriously considered picking up a G Power just because.
Pretty much the same on this end. I think with the G8, they're just tired of counting numbers. And that at some point, they're going to end up being like Samsung or Huawei, where it's just, oh, now we've reached 10, so we're going to do it by 10s. What happens if they go to up into the hundreds? And that's not really a sustainable naming model in general.
Eventually, we're going to get to the Moto G2000. And it'll be like we're back in the 80s again.
Or Y2K. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
That's one of the things. I'm really not getting where the G-Stylus is coming into play here. I think if you're paying $50 for just the storage and less and battery, that's just a plain old... Well, and the stylus, but... and just for... There's that extra... resolution on the action cam, but I don't think for that kind of trade-off, I don't think that's worth $50. I think you're better off spending $250 on the G-Power in general.
And when you think about it, this isn't really a Note competitor, and there really aren't many other stylus phones out there, so I'm not really sure what market Moto is trying to capture with this, because it's not going to stand up to a Note. It's not even going to stand up to a Note 10 Lite or Note 10 Lite. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So exactly. I mean, it's not even going to stand up to that. It's not even close. So maybe Motorola is just shooting to be the phone in the mid-range space with a stylus for those people who like the stylus. It's very possible. I don't see it selling a whole lot of units, but you know, you do you, Moto. It's all good.
Or maybe they just like copied LG instead. Hey, they're doing a mid-range stylus phone for several years now, and that G Stylo is.
Are they still doing the Stylos? I don't even remember. It's been off my radar for so long. Like I know that LG used to do a Stylo. I don't know if they have a current iteration on that. Off the top of my head, I suppose a quick Google search would answer that question.
Yeah, perhaps. The latest one is 5, but I'm not sure whether it's they've updated like the 2018 or 2019, which...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's a shame that we don't get any more robust inductive stylus phones that could perhaps push the envelope even further, but Samsung seems to be doing all right on its own, and, well, there's always a monopoly somewhere. So.
Yep. And according to an article written in 2019, that the Stylo 5, they're talking about the Stylo 5. So presumably it's less than 8 months old, which is unfortunate because I don't give it a second thought.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Unfortunate as is Huawei's plight right now, dealing with its U.S. situation. That entity list still grasping a lot of its imports, you know, still relying on that. Yep. And they've been taking their sweet, sweet time trying to figure out alternate sources for all of their parts and all of their services. And they're trying to figure out the app situation too, because they're really trying to fend off Google and trying to just get away from Google Play services and all that. So what we're looking at right now is a potential opening to more apps without having to deal with Google, and that's by joining the Global Developer Service Alliance, which was started off by Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo. Coincidentally, they also made an Android AirDrop service that they share between the three OEMs. So lots of synergy going on over there. But it looks like Huawei, according to Reuters, is about to join or has already joined the group. And this would pave the way for developers to submit their apps to a single platform and have their app appear on all of their individual, the phone OEMs individual app stores. So Huawei has an app store, Xiaomi has an app store, BBK has its own app store. You just have to pass through a single membrane and then they take care of the rest of it. So that'd be great. And it'd be interesting to see if developers would be able to make more money. Hearing about the 30% share that Google takes, which Apple has standardized and is kind of unfortunate. We'll have to see if the Chinese manufacturers take less. There's also the ongoing concern about intellectual property theft, and we'll have to see if these developers will go for having their apps copied, stolen, and chances there. And we've seen it happen, so there's always a flip side to that coin right there. Not really intending on spending too much time on this topic, but do you think this has any real chance of succeeding?
I'm kind of wondering, like, who is gaining more by this? Because on the one hand, you've got Huawei, who has no access to Google Play Store or Google Play Services or the Google App Store, which is, I mean, kind of what makes an Android phone an Android phone. I mean, you can say, you know, that you have an Android phone, except in China. So outside of China, if you have no access to any of that stuff, you pretty much got a very expensive paperweight. So on the one hand, Huawei joining this alliance in order to encourage developers to once again, you know, add their apps to Huawei's app store in addition to Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo, that's a great thing. But also, when you think about it, if you're in Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo's shoes, you really, really want the number two phone manufacturer in the world to be a part of this alliance as well, because because now if you're Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo, you can go out and you can say, you know, hey, if you submit to this Global Developers Alliance, the Service Alliance, then not only, you know, you're going to bring your apps to the second most popular OEM in the world, which is not a small thing. So, I mean, just from a kind of a sales standpoint, Oppo, Vivo, and Xiaomi must be like dancing in the streets now, because now they've got like a major player on board. And so it's kind of a chicken and egg thing, because, you know, first you have to get developers enticed to add apps to this, I guess we'll call it a multi-distribution point. to all the various different app stores. But at the same time, you know, Huawei might have the benefit of now getting a bigger app store to play with outside of China. So, I mean, this could be a win-win. Will it ever amount to what Google has in the Play Store? Probably not. But I think all four of these companies are probably better off today than they were yesterday.
Well, I think the difficult part for the Chinese OEMs is that right now, at least in terms of Huawei, half of its business is within China for consumer phones, and most of that is maintaining the upgrade cycle, which is always hard to do with ever-increasing competition between Huawei, Xiaomi, and the BBK properties. And the only real growth for any of these Chinese properties is outside the U.S., the China, Greater China area.
Oh, and for sure.
Huawei will have to be the first one, because they have no choice. They have to adopt their own app store and figure out a way to make that viable in a growing portion of their business. Because
right. And there's a billion people in China, sure, but there's another 7.5 billion outside of China that might be interested in Huawei phones as well. So it's, in this particular case, anything that Huawei can do to shake off the U.S. influence on it is going to be better off for Huawei. But at the end of the day, Huawei is going to need Google in order to go mainstream. And without going mainstream, it's still going to rely on the Chinese market, which was 60% of its sales last year.
Yeah, I think that this is Huawei stepping into the pond, which has frozen over, but we don't know how thick the ice is just yet. So it's going to have to take that step, which is going to be a little bit scary for them, but we'll have to see. And Hey, that's speaking of scary, how about voice typing? If you've ever dictated a text to your loved ones or to colleagues, and the phone picks up a word that you didn't say and is very insulting to the parties that you're trying to communicate to.
Or confusing. I mean, it doesn't even have to be insulting. It can just be like, what? And I have sent several text messages purposely because I dictated it out, saw what it said, and it was just so funny I had to send it.
Yeah. Pretty much. So imagine that, and then having Google try to add punctuation to it. Those periods and commas that I think most humans would be able to handle on their own, but hey, let's have Google do it. Well, the fact of the matter is that perhaps saying, hey, this is the text I want to send, comma, doesn't actually work out that well for people. And sometimes Google actually puts down the word comma, which is not what you're supposed to do. Please be smarter than that. Thank you very much. Right. So Google, I believe this was related to a Play Services update, where the voice dictation in general, which is separate from Gboard's own dictation function, has adopted automatic punctuation. And you can't turn this off. It just happens. Google just puts it down and will not fix it. And people have been complaining. It's been interesting to see how... So our headline here, which is pretty cute. Google voice typing now has, period, automatic punctuation, comma, and it's screwing up, period, people's messages, period. Yeah.
Well played to that headline writer.
Yeah. Manuel is a pretty good writer. And I think he deserves your support, so please do that. But yeah, it's I don't know how Google can fix its way out of this for starters, because this is a top-down service. This is a one-way service where Google just figures things out. You don't have the chance to use machine learning and to use federated learning on any of the users, because the complaints have to be manually sent back in the form of reports or reviews or what have you. So I think this could have done a little bit more baking in the oven, so to say, before they served it to people.
I think this is very likely. The article speculates this as well. This seems to be something that was kind of in trials, but accidentally got rolled out to the general public. This is definitely something that... there should be some way to turn it off. There should be some way to turn off automatic punctuation. And this is probably one of those oversights where Google was thinking to itself, or Google probably never even occurred to them, hey, maybe this is going to be terrible and people won't want it. So it would, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, Google's human, or I should say Google employs humans, and those humans do make mistakes. So, you know, it's not surprising that there's no opt out of this, or there's no way to turn off automatic punctuation, just because who wouldn't want automatic punctuation? Well, Google, you're assuming that it works, and it doesn't. So, no. I mean, that's the biggest problem. I think this is very likely just going to be something that gets rolled back very quietly, and maybe with an apology on a blog or something like that. But I think it's probably something that's just going to get rolled back, and suddenly it'll stop doing it, and we'll just kind of all shrug and move on. So
shrug and move on, and hopefully perhaps that's what we will do here at Android Police. Okay. I think that's about time to drop in our little ad here, promoting ourselves, and as you were, as I try and copy and paste text into our Twitch chat, because this is the multimedia podcast and we do our best here to support that.
Hashtag shameless self-promotion. Go for it.
So Android Police is making major changes to our Twitch streaming schedule, and you'll learn more about them at the end of the show. In the meantime, you can still support the great writing we do by subscribing to us on Twitch. You'll still get those free entries in our giveaways that we do. Those Rafflecopters still have those Twitch modules in there, where you can get up to like 7 entries just by following us, just by subscribing to us. You can pay $5 a month or nothing at all. If you have Amazon Prime, you link that up to your Twitch account, and then you can sub for free. We get the money, and Jeff Bezos cries a little bit. So there you go. You can visit twitch.tv/androidpolice to learn more about that. You do have to resub every month if you do want to have that free money come to us. But if you rather not care about all that, including all the giveaway stuff, you can just go to androidpolice.com and click on the donate button and just choose the options that work well for you. Thank you very much, and on with the show.
Indeed.
Adam.
Yes, sir.
How have you been doing with all the stuff that you have been doing? It's been a long time since we've gotten to chat, and I do want to catch up with you, especially from those Pocket Nail days. I think we should take it back to that because those were fun times. We got to do the podcast, the Pocket Nail Weekly, over there, and you were occasional guest host and also guest. How's it been?
It's been good. You know, I'm living the hashtag freelance life these days, so I'm working, you know, for a lot of different outlets, doing a lot of writing, not so much podcasting anymore, but, you know, who knows, that might pick up again. So, I mean, the nature of freelance work is A, feast or famine. You know, you're either going to be inundated with work or you're going to have nothing. And B, you know, you kind of take what you can get. So, you know, I'm not podcasting today. I could be podcasting three different shows next week. It's kind of the way it works out. So it's a lot of fun. And I like the flexibility of it. You know, I get to kind of pick my own assignments and kind of pick what I want to work on. And I work with some amazing people, you know, from like my two primary outlets right now are Board at Work. You know, Endabong is awesome. You've met him and you know, you've hung with him. And I think he's probably been on this show or at least maybe.
I don't think we've invited him. Yeah, which is a shame. And yeah, we probably should have done that.
Right. So I enjoy working with him, and the team that I work with at LifeWire is so nice. It's almost intimidating. Like, everyone there is just like super nice. And you're just like, man, I don't think I'm this nice. Can I be here? And so, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I get to do a lot of different types of projects. I get to do reviews and how to's and writing, and I can work pretty much anywhere I want. You know, I can, you know, sit in a coffee shop across the street from my daughter's gymnastics class and get some work done there as much as I can at my own desk at home. So I love it. Can't beat the commute either.
Yeah, I can't complain either. I mean, you know, it's on the Android Police side, it's been really fun having been able to produce this podcast three times a week. It's been interesting trying to see how we could shape this show into what it is. And besides that, though, I'm looking forward to get back into a little bit more writing because, well, first of all, it pays the bills. So there's that. Then, you know, that there's always a slot open for that. And second of all, I think with some of the things coming down the pipe that are going to be a little bit more long form or a little bit more different to just strictly Android or, well, considering Android Police covers security cameras and smart home and all that stuff, we're good. It's going to be interesting to see what some of the projects that come down the line. So hopefully I get to be involved in that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like one thing that I love to do is just I love doing reviews because I just, you know, I get to, you know, play with some new toys and figure out why they're awesome and figure out other reasons why they suck. So I will never get sick of doing that. And, you know, freelancing allows me to do that. So, you know, you can't complain.
Yeah, so you're covering. So like one day it's like. Anabong ships you a pair of headphones that you want to try out, and then the next day you're writing a how-to on, I don't know, how to do something with Philips screw heads.
How to disable autoplay in Netflix, you know, something like that. that's a topical one they just announced this week.
Great. Yep. Yeah, thank you, Netflix, for taking so long to address that.
Finally, yeah. Jeez. So it's a great time, and not really much else to say about it. You know, I have the freedom to do whatever I need to do. I can be the house husband and cart kids to and from classes if I need to. And, you know, so I enjoy that freedom as well. So yeah, it's awesome.
Which is great. And I think the story, there's a similar story for both of us when we first walked into our jobs. Literally, we walked into our jobs and kind of just, we asked and then, you know, hey, that it just happened, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you'd like to share that story with, I've heard it several times, but if you want to share.
You mean like how I started working at Pocket Now?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a fun story. Yeah, so back in 2012, it was somewhere around the Note 2. So was that 2012? Many, yeah. many moons ago. I want to say it was Note 2, Note 3, something like that. So I was listening to the Pocket Now Weekly because Michael Fisher is like on my Mount Rushmore of podcast hosts. So I really enjoyed what he was doing there. And I believe the reason I started listening to the podcast was because at the time they were doing like a contest to win whatever note it was, Note 2, Note 3, whatever it was. And one of the things you had to do was you had to read the articles. And at the bottom of one of the articles of every day, there'd be a trivia question. You'd have to answer the trivia question based on what was in the article and then combine all five answers to, you know, in one email to enter the contest. It was very convoluted, but fun. And I believe Wednesday's question was embedded in the podcast. So I started listening to the podcast to get the question. And then, you know, Michael Fisher. So I started listening to the podcast all the time. And I want to say a couple months later, they just mentioned like a drop throwaway thing. Oh, by the way, we're hiring. And, you know, whatever. I'm like, huh, well, that's fun. And I had done a little bit of writing for like some WebOS stuff, like WebOS Roundup, Mobile Roundup, stuff like that. Many, many moons ago. So I had done some of that. And so I'm like, well, what the hell? So I wrote the most ridiculous job application email you could possibly imagine. And I shot it off to Anton. And he got back to me. He's like, hey, let's talk. And I'm like, seriously? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, all right, cool. Let's do that. And I mean, long story short, that started, you know, got me writing editorials. And, you know, it was basically just extra, you know, beer money, basically every week. It was nothing I was going to retire off of. But then along came an opportunity to jump on with Android Authority. So I did. And I worked with them part-time for a while until they brought me on full-time to work on their podcast network. And that was fun. And I've been doing that for the last 2.5 years.
You've been a pretty good host and editor for, the host for the Android Authority podcast. And did you ever get to co-host the Sound Guys? Or
I appeared on the Sound Guys a couple of episodes. Every episode was produced by me. So, like, I was in charge of, like, the ideation and the editing and putting everything together. But for the most part, we left that to the actual Sound Guys themselves. I appeared on, I want to say, 2 episodes. One because it was planned and the other one because, oh, crap, we need someone to do this section. So, for those not familiar, the Sound Guys podcast is more of a narrative style podcast where we kind of tell a story or kind of explain one aspect of sound in everyday life. It doesn't necessarily have to be music or headphones, but it could be, you know, the effect of drone noise on wildlife, or it could be using sound as a weapon, or the psychological effect of Christmas music. So, I mean, stuff like that. It was a fascinating world to dive into. And I had a lot of fun with it.
You had to like come up with some concepts to illustrate, well, via audio, some of those things, man.
It was a good time. So, good but stuff. all three of those podcasts have been put on hiatus at the moment. So, I'm back out there doing freelance work while we wait for those podcasts to reemerge, if they ever do.
I do miss your hosting style. Your kind of brash, stark kind of like let's lead the engine and you played. Pass the ball pretty well too. So a couple of things that a good host should be definitely, it was great taking the occasional listen to some of your work. So I appreciate that.
I appreciate you, and I appreciate your production abilities, because I've learned a lot of sound editing just by tapping you on the shoulder every now and then. So yeah, we would make a good team.
indeed. So I'm wondering, what you might find in store coming up, because I know right now you're kind of in a position where you're just floating along. What do you want to do next that you hope you might, learn something from?
Well, getting back to, I want to get back into reviewing, and, it's not that I'm not reviewing, it's just I haven't been doing as much of it as I would like to. So I definitely want to do that. I want to, that's what I'm mostly pitching to various outlets right now. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I covered the Chicago Auto Show for Board at Work. So I've got a couple of pieces coming out on boardatwork.com. Pay attention, watch for those coming out. Those should be coming out probably like this weekend, early next week. And so that's what I'm looking to get forward to. As far as like long-term plan, I don't know. It's the freelance life. I'll just, I'll keep plugging away. And I've got some ideas for, different podcasts that I would like to work on. So maybe there will be something there. It's just a question of, finding the right relationship.
We'll have to see. I think those endeavors sound pretty ambitious, and I wish you luck in achieving them.
Well, thank you.
Mm. Well, in any case, I think that might be the point where we wrap this up. So all the topics we've talked about today can be found at androidpolice.com/podcast. And while you're there, please do hit the donate button at the top of the site and help support the great work we do. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Send an email to podcast@androidpolice.com. And here's the point of the show where I let Adam tell you where he can find you. No, you can find him at the following places.
Yep. You can find me on Twitter at Dead Technology, and my DMs are open, so feel free to send me a chat. Always happy to converse, or if you have work for me, that's even better. And you can also see my online portfolio at about.me/deadtechnology. My portfolio is there. It links over to my Tumblr, which I never use except to host my portfolio, and I should probably change that at some point. I should probably actually turn that into a website or something. But but for the most part, twitter.com/deadtechnology, Instagram Dead Technology. That's pretty much where you're going to find me.
Indeed. And I thank you for coming on short notice for this program. I do appreciate it as a friend.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun, and yeah, it was a good time. It was great to catch up with you, because it's been a minute since we last talked.
Now, for the changes, as we promised to tell you about, the show is effectively going on hiatus. That's ironically, as has happened to Adam, is happening to us at the moment. Yep. It's been our pleasure bringing you the podcast over the past 7 years, and we were excited and hopeful that the new 3 times a week format would bring in more people to listen and watch. But another one of our goals with the Switch was to have the show financially sustain itself, and unfortunately, we have not been able to exercise any options to make it so. This podcast will continue to exist as an entity for the time being, but as of next week, we cannot guarantee when your new episodes will be produced, if at all, and there's some uncertainty about that, so we might have to wait for an announcement next week in which we settle things down. But I think I speak for David, Ryan, Cody, and Corbin, the whole team here, really, when I say thank you for giving us a listen, for checking out our live streams, especially those hours-long Q&A streams. Cody, you son of a dog. And dropping in a few comments. To those who chipped in a few bucks here and there, especially, very much thank you over there. And on Twitter, I think we should note that Android Police is at Android Police. David Reddick is at RDRV3. Ryan Witwam is at Ryan, WHITWAM. Ryan Hager is at RyneHager. Cody Toombs is at Cody_TOOMBS. Corbin Davenport is at Corbin Davenport. I've been your showrunner for the past few months, and it's been an honor to serve you. My name is Jules Wong, and you can find me on Twitter at @PointJules. For now, we'll see you back on the site and in Audioland. Until next time, please take care.